Welcome in. Happy Tuesday night. 10:06, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you till 1 o'clock tonight. Michael Heidemann producing back from Dallas, where you took in Texas Stadium. You hung with Jerry Jones. You were there.
I was.
When Ellen DeGeneres was sitting in the same suite with President, or former President, George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a big thing that you did there, Michael Heidemann.
Yeah, I wish we had the same seats. Ours were kind of a little bit distant from hers.
Well, you're not quite on that level, but your life is young.
Yes, not yet.
Anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Big show tonight. Bruce Miles from the Daily Herald, retiring, covered the Cubs since 1998, which was my first year as a young Mark Harmon going out and covering sports.
Wow, 1998?
Yeah.
Man, you've been at it for a while.
Me and Bruce Miles, he was a little bit more established at that point, was covering the team. I was just being allowed into the stadium. But Bruce was super nice to me. And we always had similar takes on the people that we were around. Like, he loved Jim Riggleman, who was the manager at that time. I loved Jim Riggleman. He was a huge fan of Joe Maddon. Didn't want him to be fired. I'm a huge fan of Joe Maddon. Didn't think he should be fired. And a million other takes. So Bruce will be on the show a little bit later tonight. Also, Dotsy Bausch, who is a silver medalist in cycling. Fascinating journey. Was dealing with anorexia when she was in her 20s, ended up winning a gold medal or a silver medal, the oldest Olympian to do it in that sport. She'll be on the show in the 12 o'clock hour tonight, along with Elizabeth Alfano, as the movie is Game Changers, and it's coming to Netflix. And it's about athletes that do not eat meat, that are just plant-based, and somehow, some way, they recover better, and they're stronger, and they're amazing. So... But Dotsy's just it's a really cool story. I think you'll enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, I got to hear more about this.
You're sticking around late night tonight. But I do want to start. I was on Friday night, and we were talking about the college admission scandal. And we have yet another husband and wife, parents, being sentenced today. Federal judge sentencing Gregory and Marcia Abbott to 1 month in prison. They paid $125,000. So their daughter, her ACT and SAT scores would get the old boost, right? They paid $50,000 to a proctor to change the ACT exam. What'd you get on your ACTs, Michael Heidemann?
ACTs? Is that the one where it gets up to 36?
That's correct.
Ooh, not anywhere close to 36, I can tell you that for a fact. I think I was in the mid-20s,
all right, I got a 22, mm-hmm. And I got a 940 on my SATs. Just for transparency here.
Just showing off, huh?
That's showing off.
12. Well, what the SAT was what, 1,200 or 1,600?
1,600. 940 is dirt.
Oh,
You're barely allowed to play sports with that one, Jenna.
I don't even remember what I got on my SAT.
Well, I can tell you what I got.
Okay.
500 on the...
I'm still waiting to see what Lori Loughlin and her husband are going to get after this.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. So here it is. $125,000 to boost the ACT and the SAT. ACT apparently costs less to boost. 50 grand of that proctor. The SAT proctor held out for $75,000. So you add that up, that's 125. Now, these parents were trying to get their daughter into Duke University. Now, they both pled guilty. This came back in May. And prosecutors were asking that they go to jail for 8 months with a supervised release and a $40,000 fine. The sentence is not for 8 months. It's for 1 month, so one-eighth of that. 250 hours of community service, a $45,000 fine, and 1 year of supervised release. Okay? Now here, I appreciate that if you are wealthy in life, you do get privileges that the rest of us don't get. You've had a lot of success. Maybe you inherited it that you didn't have a lot of success, but you got a lot of money. You can walk into a restaurant that's got a two-hour wait. You can walk up to the maitre d' and not worry about giving them $200, $300, whatever it is, and you get yourself a table, right? You can buy first class and not think about it. You've earned it. You can have a million different things. You can have a personal chef. You can build yourself a tennis court like they're doing at the White House now. You can build yourself a whatever you want. I get it. With money comes privilege. And giving your kid an advantage in life by maybe hiring the best tutors, or if they're into sports, getting them the best coaches to try to advance them along the way, that's within the rules. I think we all agree, right? That's that kid born into that family has an advantage. But when you go into cheating on tests to try to get somebody into college, now we have crossed the line. And what's most interesting to me is you're not helping your kid at that point. You're actually teaching your kid that they are allowed, because of our financial wellwithal, that we can actually get around the rules, and the rules do not apply to you. And normally, if the parents are doing it, they're not doing it for the kid, right? They're doing it for themselves so they can tell everybody, where's Susie going to school? Susie's going to Duke. Billy's going to Harvard. Ralph's going to Northwestern. He's going to the University of Chicago. It's not for the kid most of the time. It's so the parent can look good. Look at how great of a job I've done as a parent. Sally is on her way to the most prestigious. She's going to Penn. She's going to Brown. She's going to USC. All right? It's a terrible lesson. And so I'm like, I can hear Jennings getting ready to jump in here. Like, I feel like, look, whatever they get that you're found out, go ahead. But then I listen to the parents' excuse here, or their reasoning. George and Marcia Abbott, they've lived in New York. They lived in Aspen, Colorado, okay? George was the chairman of and CEO of International Dispensing Corporation, a packaging company, food and beverage, making a bunch of dough. Mom's living the life, right? In their sentencing memo, the Abbotts asked the government to impose a sentence of probation, saying they met the mastermind, the scammer, his name is William Ricksinger, during what they called, quote, one of the worst chapters of their lives. They were having a really hard time. The marriage was in trouble. They had a kid who was having all sorts of problems, and they were trying to help out their other kid, the daughter in this case. According to the memo that they wrote, the daughter was struggling with late-diagnosed chronic Lyme disease. The son was battling a drug addiction. And their 31-year marriage was, quote, strained to the breaking point. And this is Greg Abbott's quote. In many instances during my life, I have shown integrity and taken the right path under pressure. But in this perfect storm, I, quote, buckled. To every single soul demoralized or offended by my actions, I deeply apologize. And then there's the wife, Marcia. I was broken and woefully ill-equipped to be interacting with a man like Rick Singer. Jennings, calm yourself. I betrayed my higher nature and became a part of a larger damaging system. I take that very seriously and take responsibility for it. Dismay, along with regret and contrition, accompany me every day. And here's the daughter that writes in. This is what the daughter says about her mom. She wrote a letter on behalf of the mother, not on behalf of the father. Read into that what you want. She writes on behalf of the mother, quote, she has a soul that is more beautiful and warm than any other soul I know of, and I am unbelievably fortunate to have such a woman to look up to. I realize you have no way of knowing my mother, but I hope and pray you can glean who she is. She is selfless. So when I read that, I did start to feel sad. Like, here's the daughter who's trying to advocate for the mom. Please don't put my mom in jail. And here she is. The parents went out to try to cheat on the ACT, or went out and cheated on the ACT and SAT, spent $120.
Can I ask you a silly question?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. If you're having a bad day,
uh-huh,
does cheating appeal to you as a good thing to do in any situation?
Right.
So, if you're having a bad day, do you automatically forget what the rules are because you're having a bad day, a bad week? It's
a real slippery slope. I was having a bad day. I'm sorry that I yelled at you. Okay. I was having a bad day. I'm really sorry that I was driving 7,000 miles an hour and cracked my car into yours. And now you're in the hospital. I was having a really, really bad day, and I fell prey to Rick Singer, and I gave up.
Yeah, I forked over my own money to pay for someone to give my daughter an unfair edge to get into college.
Because
I was just having a really bad day.
Right. And by the way, the phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in here. And I'm asking the question, like, what's the proper punishment here? What mm-hmm. should happen? But here, like...
Well, how much money did this couple spend?
$125,000
Okay. Lori Loughlin and her husband, $500,000
Well, and the money, whatever it is, $125,000, $750,000, $1,050,000, whatever it is, at the end of the day, it's the same crime. You're cheating and you're trying to get your kid an advantage that he or she does not deserve.
But when it comes to sentencing, the money matters because...
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it doesn't as far as sentencing goes, but it, like from where I'm standing, just the sheer morals of the whole thing.
Well, there are no morals here.
Well...
At all.
Fair enough.
Come on, Michael.
It's also very interesting. Like none, you think that you hear the parents getting a bulk of the blame and what they're going through, but I haven't read a single thing about the daughters or the sons saying, you know, I wish I would have studied more, and maybe I should take some of the blame as well, because you're not saying that they came back after bombing the ACT, looked at their score, got a 32, and was like, oh. I guess I did a little bit better than I thought. Like, was it a secret the whole time, or were they in it? Like, there's like a web of things going on.
I'd love to know how many of these kids actually had some idea of what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it has to be... It has to be.
Because some of them had to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that... I mean, we don't know whether they did or did not, but I'm sure they... This isn't... Let's be real. This is not the first time that mommy and daddy have stepped in here to try to help Susie or Billy mm-hmm. get an advantage in life. I'm sure it's been going on since they were 4 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old. The rules do not apply to you.
There's another part of the mix here. This is the more blatant kind of, you know, just really ugly conduct. But then you've got I've got plenty of money. I'm going to endow a chair at College X. Well, of course, you know my children are going to get into College X, no questions asked.
Well, that's...
I'm going to put my name on your new business school.
So right, so that is a whole nother level. That is where money actually does matter, because you don't get the business school for $125,000. This, if they wanted to spend the $20 million or whatever it would be for the business school, well, then maybe you're punching the ticket for your kid to get in, I guess. I mean, I would think that's how it works. This is we're just trying to do the right thing in our minds to help our daughter get into school. 312-981-7200. People texting in. The daughter is a moron. And I went to Highland Park High School. Is that good? Yes, going to Highland Park High School is good. That's where I went. Class of 91. Now, I didn't do particularly well when I was there, but it's a wonderful school. That minus the fact that I thought there was some teacher bias to some of the kids in the school who they thought were always got the good grade no matter what was going on, but that probably happens everywhere. And look, 1 month to see, you know, to see your parents go to prison, even if it's for a month, that's a moment in time that you're not going to forget, right? So here, let's come on back. We'll take some calls coming on back here. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the college admissions scandal. And then at 10:35, we've got a scandal going on in the city with our police officers. I'll explain. 720 WGN. Talking about the college admissions scandal on 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you to 1 o'clock tonight. Gregory Abbott ordered to report to federal prison on November 20th. It's 10 days before my wedding. I guess he will not be in attendance. Marcia Abbott won't have to turn herself into January the 3rd. The couple paying $125,000. $50,000 to an ACT proctor, $75,000 to an SAT proctor to get their daughter's tests up so she could get into Duke and go root for Coach K and company. They got 1 month in prison. Asking you the question, is that a proper punishment for two parents trying to help their daughter go to college at the best college and create all the advantages that Susie deserved? Let me get Edwin in here on 720 WGN. What's up, Edwin? Welcome to the show, my friend. And when
negative on the punishment. That's too lenient. What the judge should have done is said, you are going to pay the college education of a student who cannot afford to go to college. And I don't even think that's a good enough punishment. But just to get that minimum amount of time and a minimum monetary fine, I think, was just kind of ridiculous, really. I think it could have been a lot more serious than that.
So you want the fine to be greater than $45,000. And what about the jail time there, Edwin? If it was Judge Edwin, what would you do?
Oh, I'd give him a good year in prison thinking about what they did and the fact that it was a blatant lie and they deprived other students the opportunity who deserved that opportunity to go to school. So I think a year in prison would be a good time.
A year in prison. Do they get to stay in the same cell together or are they in separate cells?
Negative.
Mom? Negative.
Negative. Separate cells.
Okay. Edwin, appreciate the phone call. 312-981-7200. I do agree on the fine being larger. And I think that's a great idea. You're going to set up a scholarship to Duke University, and you're going to pay for three people to go there. And I'm going to look at your bank account and see how much dough you have, and I'm going to take a nice solid 10% or something along those lines, maybe 5%. I don't know. A decent hit. Let me get Ruth in here on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Hi. I went to the finest high school in the city of Chicago, and I had a learning disability. I struggled with everything and could not comprehend it. I had to go to summer school, and I did get my diploma, and I graduated. And I think one of the reasons why they bended the rules for me is because I had three jobs after school. I paid for 2 years of my tuition, my prom, and my trip to Washington, D.C. I went on to become a Girl Scout leader, and I didn't have any girls. There wasn't a troop at W.J. Murphy. I also hosted kids from Iron River, Michigan in my backyard so they could go to Great America. And I waited 5 months for another parent of a girl to host that troop. I did it on my own. And through my entire life, I had my own successes. But I want to know what criteria in higher education eliminates a person who doesn't have this highfalutin score. I thought education was for everyone. Thank God that they bended the rules for me because I turned around and did everything I could to honor that school and make my life a contribution, even with a learning disability. I think if you're going to give a college education to someone and you pay the amount that it's appropriate as their court leniency, I would give the education to a person with a learning disability and send them to Duke University because you never know what that person can contribute to society, even though they can't pass that ACT or SAT test.
Ruth, you are an inspiration. Great call. Congratulations. Way to work hard. You should be extremely proud of yourself, and it sounds like you are.
Thank you so much. You fellas are gentlemen. Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Thank you for calling. See, in theory, I love it. Like, hey, Duke, or any high-level school, taking a kid who doesn't have the best test score but shows tremendous work ethic and you think with the proper coaching is going to be able to get through school, do well, and be able to contribute to society, that's a great kid to let in. Get outside the box, not just look at what did he get in his SAT? How many extracurricular activities is he in? By the way, do you think his parents will be able to donate to the athletic department? I mean, it would be interesting if we, you know, sort of had maybe expanded the reasons and criteria that we allow certain people into school, which they do to a point, but could be done a little bit more often. Let's get into news. 10:34, 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great, great Tuesday night. Went to temple tonight, Michael Heideman. That's right.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
It's Yom Kippur.
That's right.
I'm breaking the rules right now. I feel like I got out myself. But I did go and had a wonderful experience over at DePaul University. I gave some dough to the services.
Okay.
And I met some people. I stood up. I sat down. I sang songs. I'm going to go again tomorrow.
What a good boy. That's important, though.
I'm breaking the rules by doing the radio show tonight. So
are you supposed to just not do anything during?
I should just be, you know, sitting at home and relaxing and not working. But when I was offered this particular shift, I didn't check my Jewish calendar, mm-hmm. and then I said yes, and then I just didn't want to. I love being on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Almighty is.
He would smile down upon that.
Right. Yeah.
Doing what you love.
I think so.
Exactly.
I think so.
I think you're in the good.
If people could just text support on that one, I would appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Hey, real quick, before we move on to what's going on with our outstanding officers who protect us, but they're slightly bending the rules here in Chicago, which I think is kind of interesting and humorous, and I'm curious everyone's reaction to that. Let me get Dave in here real fast because you've been hanging for a long time, Dave. You want to weigh in on the college admission scandal? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that this sort of thing has been going on for generations. There's nothing new about it. People have other people pull strings for them to get into certain schools. I mean, if your dad's a congressman, if he's a former alma mater, if he gives lots of money to this school or that school.
Well, hold on, Dave. It's new that people are getting caught and they're going to jail and there's extensive fines. That is new, correct?
But why Hollywood celebrities? Why do they focus on a few of these? I mean, it says a lot about the FBI and who they're going after. I mean, nobody from the pharmaceutical industry went to jail for the opioid crisis, and that involved death and destruction. But to go after Felicity Huffman, I mean, this whole thing is a joke.
So I know. Okay, so you're naming something else that I agree with you. When
there's no justice here, I mean.
Well, hold on. So you think, first of all, Gregory and Marsha Abbott, who are going to jail for 1 month each for paying $125,000 to boost ACT and SAT scores, they're not actors. They're not Hollywood people. This is a businessman who has got a bunch of dough. So
that's okay with me. It's just that there are people enrolled in colleges right now that I'm sure had strings pulled for them and who got around. Who took the easy way in. And, you know,
So we should look the other way is what you're saying, Dave? Or are you just saying that we should be focusing on things that are more important? Is that it?
I'm saying a little bit of both. I just think they, you know, they should, if they're going to continue on with this investigation, broaden their investigation. Go to more schools. Go across the country, you know. There's nothing new about this. In Great Britain, if your father's the house, a member of the House of Commons or House of Lords, you could probably get into Oxford for all we know. You know, there's nothing new about this.
Way to drop in the House of Commons, Dave. I like that. That's just showing some over the pond knowledge. Okay, I got you, Dave. Appreciate the phone call. Okay.
Take care.
You
good
too.
Holiday.
Thank you. Back at you. 312-981-7200. Look, this isn't number 10 out of 10 on the list of crimes that are going on. I'm not making that argument. And I'm actually just trying to have the discussion as to, you know, what do we think is right in this situation. I like the fact that hopefully some lessons are potentially being learned that, and I say potentially, and maybe I'm being too optimistic, that maybe they're not being learned, that allowing your kid to actually go about their business and learn and fail and have successes without mommy and daddy holding their hand, or worse, dipping into their wallet to allow you to get around things. Again, get him a sweet tutor, get him the best coach, whatever you want to do. That if you got money, good for you. Even if you don't have money and you want to dip into the red to try to help out your kid, that's awesome too. But to try to show to be teaching that the rules do not apply to you, we're going to get around it this way, that's going to have a huge cost down the line, and you're not helping your kid. Now here, speaking of something that's also not number 10 out of 10 in crimes, this is coming out of the Tribune tonight, and I think we've reported on it on WGN Radio as well. Chicago police officers who protect us, and we thank you, and all of it. But we got a little bit of something going on here. Chicago police officers improperly used department-issued play cards to park illegally with their personal vehicles in police station parking lots so they or their friends or relatives could attend Cubs and Bears games. They're going to the Cub or Bear game in their own car. They're not on duty. They're parking in the lot right by Wrigley, right by Soldier Field. And now there's an investigation that is under that has uncovered this injustice. Officers also regularly park their cars in tow-away zones along a narrow city street, creating potential safety hazards by blocking fire lanes and emergency exits. Inspector General Joseph Ferguson's office is reporting this today. So they're parking for Cubs games. They're parking on the side of the street. They're in tow zones. Look, I've been going to, you know, Bulls games, Blackhawks games since I was, 5 years old. I remember there was a whole line right next to the stadium where this is where the officers parked. The judges, they didn't have to pull into the parking lot, spend whatever it was for the best parking back then, probably $12, $10. Certainly not the $25 or $30 that it is now, but that's where they parked. And now this is coming out. Should an officer of the law be able to go to a Cubs and Bears game and park in the lot? I mean, are we really going this far?
Yeah, I've been seeing this for so long, for so many years, that I just thought it was just part of the way of Chicago. I didn't know that there was a problem with it, to be honest, because I just would always see it. I know that people now, especially since the city is so overrun with cars and the parking debate has been going on for so long, that now it's getting to the head and with the new mayor and everything. But, you know, to be honest, it never even crossed my mind that it was a problem.
Latest investigation uncovered the Town Hall District State located a few blocks east of Wrigley Field provided free parking in the lot for off-duty officers. May of 2018, Ferguson's office at Town Hall had an organized system with sign-in sheets that required officers to list the make and model of their vehicle and name of their guests.
Wow.
I'm just curious, 312-981-7200, for the people that are protecting us and going above and beyond, Are we bothered that they get to park in places that we do not? Should they not be given a Chicago privilege for being on the streets and giving back, doing jobs that we don't want to do? Or should it be, you are just like me, you get no benefit. If you're going to a Cubs or Bears game, you should pay the freight. No benefits for our officers of the law. I want you to pull in the same lot that I'm pulling into. And I'm curious if an officer of the law is willing to call in here and say, you know what, either A, I deserve that, or B, I don't do that. I know it's wrong. I'm just curious. And here we go. David's calling. His dad was a fireman. This could be interesting. David, go ahead, man. What's on your mind?
Yeah, when there's a fire and there's a police car parked next to the fire hydrant,
uh-huh,
they bust the windows and yep, run the fire hose right through the car.
That's true, no matter what car it is, but that's I've seen it happen, David.
So cops don't get away with it if there's a house fire. They go right through the spot.
Which they shouldn't, though.
Do you remember your dad, the fireman, doing illegal parking things, David?
No.
Uh-huh. See, he followed.
He didn't want his car wrecked.
Wait, say that again. I didn't hear you.
He didn't want his vehicle wrecked.
Okay, I got you. All right, David, appreciate you. 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome to WGN. Go ahead.
So I want to make sure I get this straight.
Yeah.
So what this complaint is, or this problem is that an off-duty police officer, mm-hmm, went to their police station or whatever, parked their personal car in the police station parking lot,
right,
and went to a Cubs game.
Yeah, that's right. It's written.
Okay, so wait a minute. So now I work for a company that is a mile away from Wrigley Field,
uh-huh,
and if I wanted to go to the game and I went to my company parking lot and I parked my personal vehicle like I do every single day of the week in the company parking lot, and what is so wrong with that?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out myself, Tom.
It's unless they're parking. Parking by fire hydrants or just being completely ridiculous, you know, or something. Come on, man. I mean, these guys, just like you said, you know, they're first responders. I mean, and they want to go to a game and they want to be able to park, you know, come. I mean, it's ridiculous.
What about putting the play cards in. They're parking in for free on Court Place. They're blocking emergency exits by the Cadillac Palace Theater. Many of the officers were assigned to work nearby City Hall. They didn't want to pay for to park in the downtown lot, so they would just park on the street.
Okay.
Does that bother you?
So wait a minute. What they're not throwing in there is there's a lot, and I've heard this on a scanner before. There's a lot of officers that work, a side job as security or something like that, and don't park their personal vehicles while they're working their side job. Security's at the Palace Theater, the Chicago Theater, some of these buildings where they work security.
Uh huh.
So, how do they know that that's not happening?
Well,
I mean, yeah, okay, it's a fire hydrant, it's a safety issue. I can understand that. Okay,
let me ask you this one, Tom. How about an officer who's driving around in his vehicle? He's working. Traffic's going on. There's nothing that he needs to race towards, but he just doesn't want to deal with traffic, and he turns on his lights and he goes through the intersection. Does that bother you?
Yeah.
That one does.
But you know something, though?
Yeah.
So, have you ever used your job or your position as a sports commentator to do anything to benefit you, where I couldn't do that as a
yes,
you know, as a regular
yes.
person?
Yes.
Okay. So
not that I would ever admit to, but yes.
No, but I mean, you didn't do anything. You know, I'm not talking about anything. This is Chicago.
Victimless crime.
This is Chicago.
Victimless crime, but, Tom.
Right. But the thing is, it's Chicago, okay? And number two, everybody does it. I'm not advocating that. I'm getting tongue-tied.
Yeah,
I
got you, Tom. I appreciate it. I'm up against a break here. You made your point perfectly, tongue-tied and all. That was awesome. I loved the hesitation. Yes, that one bothers me. Turning on the lights and going through the red light. That one does crawl under. Park it on the street, you're good. Going to a Cubs game, you're good. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. Checking out Twitter during the break here. Story from CBS News. This seems important. Might have to get this in here before 11 o'clock. How do you feel about what's going on with Saturn there, Michael Heidemann?
Ooh, yeah, one of my favorite planets.
Great planet, right?
Yeah, the rings and everything.
I know people are driving around right now and they're thinking about Saturn.
When I do that daily.
Right, exactly. But I think that WGN, mm-hmm. we have the best listeners in the country, and this is something where we can contribute, so I thought I would bring it to you for just a second. 20 new moons have been found to be orbiting Saturn. Do you know the order of the planets? Can you work on that?
Kind of? Yeah, I can name the first probably three.
What's the closest planet to us?
Mars? Third planet.
You don't seem very certain.
No, it's the second planet.
Mars is closer than Jupiter?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it closer than Jupiter?
How far away is Saturn?
I'm guessing a few light years. A
couple ways away. Well, they found 20 new moons. I don't know how they found these moons, but they did. And scientists want the public's help in naming them. This is according to the Carnegie Institute of Science. The new discovery brings the total moons around the jewel of our solar system, that's Saturn, to 82. So they need names for these 20 moons. And if you would like to text in the name that you would like to name a moon in Saturn, I will submit it. On behalf of you and WGN and the Night Side tonight with yours truly, Mark Carmen, to the Carnegie Institute of Science. I mean, what should we name these moons? There's 20 new moons, man.
This is incredible.
You have an opportunity right now, 10:53 Tuesday night, to name a moon.
I even think we have a pizza we can give away for the best one.
We have a pizza for the best moon name?
Yeah, why not?
Really? 312-981-7200, best moon name. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rare opportunity. The new moons are about 3 miles in diameter. Seems fairly large. It's a big moon. And 17 orbits Saturn backwards. So they're doing the moonwalk around Saturn.
Wow. That goes full on 1980s Saturn.
Can you imagine being some dude that's sitting there with a periscope just checking out, that's a new moon? How the hell would you know that that's a new moon? Well, seriously.
Mark, I did a little research on this, and I looked up Saturn's moons.
Yeah?
Did you know Saturn has at least 150 moons?
150 moons.
And moonlets in total, and only 62 have been confirmed by their orbits. 53 have been given names. And they're just small icy bodies, but they're plentiful, is what I'm saying.
Small icy bodies?
Yeah.
Don't you think... What is... I find this whole thing amazing.
It is amazing. And just think, we have a team of NASA scientists 24 hours a day working on this, and they just found these 20 moons? Come on, get on your game,
The
NASA.
Movement is known as a retrograde direction. The three other moons orbit in the prograde, or the same direction as the planet. So we got a prograde situation going on with three, and we got a 17 moons going with retrograde. If anybody can explain retrograde and prograde in greater detail, I'd be willing to hear that. By the way, this topic will end in 3 minutes. But there's something about the moons and the planets and everything that's out there is just fascinating to me. Now we got 20 new moons.
You're exploring the unknown.
Right, which is a human thing, right? Don't you just love to like look out at Lake Michigan and just stare out at it, or any ocean, and just like see possibility?
They say that 90% of the water is
undiscovered.
Tonight.
Gosh. What's that?
90% of what's underwater is still undiscovered.
Really? 90%? That's amazing. Dan, I love you jumping on this topic, Dan. You got a name for a moon?
Yeah, as a music fan, I think that it's only appropriate we name a moon after Keith Moon. Let's call it Keith.
Keith Moon. Should I know who that is?
Keith Moon was the drummer for The Who.
Keith Moon was a drummer for The Who. I knew that. I was just testing you, Dan. Don't think I wasn't. Don't think I didn't know exactly who that was. Keith Moon. All right. I like it, Dan. I think that's
all right.
The moon's name is Keith. This topic might not be taking off the way I thought it would, but I like it. Keith. I don't have a great answer for this right now. But this is, to me, it feels like we could be on the cutting edge. 20 new moons, WGN, in time. Maybe just like how about just a WGN moon?
Oh, yeah.
It's the WGN. We could put up billboards on the moon. Someone's flying by. They see the radio station. You know,
live remotes from the moon?
Next thing you know, they're listening on their phone on a moon and Saturn. You never know what the future's going to hold. I mean, pretty soon Uber's going to fire all their drivers, and it's all going to be electrical, right? There's going to be you're going to be talking to a robot. I don't know where this is going, but there's 20 new moons in Saturn, team. News coming up, 720 WGN. 11:05, 720 WGN. Mark Carmen with you till 1 o'clock tonight. Bruce Miles retiring after 20 plus years covering the Chicago Cubs. He'll be with us at 11:35 at the Daily Herald. Bruce is a great guy. Love talking baseball with him. Crazy stuff going on in baseball, by the way. Not sure if you're paying attention, but the Cardinals and Braves will play Game 5 tomorrow in Atlanta, 4:02 Chicago time. Winner goes to the NLCS. Let's go, Braves. That's how I feel on that one. Cardinals impressive, man, getting that thing to a fifth game. They were trailing in the fourth game. Dodgers and Nationals play Game 5 tomorrow. Then the Rays and the Astros play a Game 5 tomorrow as Tampa, as Vic just told you, I believe, in sports there. Tampa winning today. So three elimination games in the baseball playoffs coming up here. All right, let's talk some football, though, and not really football. Ellen DeGeneres, who has certainly made a name for herself in this media world, she was invited to go to Texas Stadium to sit in Jerry Jones's box and watch the Dallas Cowboys play the Green Bay Packers. Now, Ellen is a Packers fan, and Jerry's World down there. You were just there, Michael Heidemann, correct?
Yes, I was. I was there this weekend.
So, why were you there?
I was there because I'm also a Packer fan, just like Ellen, and my family, we've always wanted to go and see the Dallas Stadium. The legend is just rampant about how amazing the stadium is, and it definitely lived up to the hype, but we went there to go and see the Packers versus the Cowboys.
Well, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That's a good family right there.
Yeah.
I'm impressed by the Heidemans. I'd like to meet Mom and Dad and whoever else was on that trip.
Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill was on the trip?
He was there too.
How much was a beer at Dallas at Cowboy Stadium? Did you buy a beer?
Yeah, I think it was not too bad. It was like $9.
$9, okay. It's not New York. That's good.
But it's like it's all Miller based around there, so those beers are nice and cold. I mean, they don't do you wrong there. Nothing warm.
It's amazing that I just said that $9 for a beer is a good price. That's
well, we live in Chicago, so
right. I mean, yeah, Wrigley and Guaranteed Rates. It's I think 11 and 10 and whatever. $9. It's what it is. It's just unfortunate. But anyway, so Ellen goes to the game, and she's in the suite, and she's sitting. She's taking a video, and she's of everyone that's in the box, and she's showing all these famous people. And there's George W. Bush. And people started screaming at her, Ellen, he doesn't stand what you stand for. You can't be sitting next to him. You should have left. So then she felt compelled to talk about it on her show.
So I've got to say, when we were invited, I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers. And get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. And don't get me wrong. I like the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I love all the Village people, as a matter of fact. But Aaron Rodgers is a friend of mine. He's the quarterback for the Packers, and so I'm sitting in the Cowboys suite, the owner of the Cowboys, and secretly cheering every time the Packers scored or every time another whistleblower came forward. And the referees, you guys, the referees. But during the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together, and so... People were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And, but a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. And but here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. And I have... But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
How good is that? And how much... Right? Way to go, Ellen. You don't have to agree with your buddy or whoever's walking down the street to... respect their opinion, appreciate their journey, for lack of a better word, wherever they're coming from. You may not agree, but isn't that what's going on right now? We just race to, I'm on this side, you're on that side. I have absolutely nothing in common with you. I love that she's a really great way of doing things. Like, she brings up fur, and I don't think animals should be used for the coat that you're wearing. That's not, even though, okay, I mean, maybe she's, I don't know, does Ellen wear leather, whatever, but she doesn't agree.
Yeah,
she thinks it's egregious, and then she's able to make a joke about like, yeah, and then, you know, furry people, and then they need to tweeze more, and so she brings in the laughter, and then, but she's still going to be friends, or cordial, with somebody who's making a choice that she doesn't agree with.
Mm-hmm. I remember when it seems like every single week that we're on, that you hear about these stories about somebody backlashing against what somebody said, and it's become such a norm in our society. I remember before there was Twitter, before there was the internet, and before cell phones, like, you know, it just became computer screens where we can always just yell at each other. There was a time when my mom and my dad would say, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. And I think that has just gone out with the bathwater nowadays. And it's cool to hear somebody like Ellen, who does have probably the most influence. She's like the new Oprah when it comes to her influential stance, say these kind of things. And, you know, because people will listen to this, and that's what people should use their platform for, is just spreading kindness. And it's nice to hear her say those kind of things, because it's true. You're never going to get forward with somebody and make new friends and live in this world unless you can understand other people's opinions and sides.
So, yeah. And just to be Like, think whatever you want about W, but, like, he's sitting there in the suite. Ellen's there. She puts the camera on him. He's smiling. They're smiling. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. And I loved what she said, and I wanted to bring it to the show tonight. Just to, like, a little snippet of a nice reminder on this beautiful Tuesday evening. Me going to temple for Yom Kippur, coming in and doing a radio show. Come on, man. Like, let's have a nice googly moment. That was my most googly moment of the day. I'm like, oh, Ellen,
mm-hmm.
Super sweet.
She's the best. And she shows that you can, you know, people, they shouldn't, I get it. Some people have done things in their past, but you shouldn't, come on, can't they just live their lives? Like, people change. And, you know, sometimes people change for the better. And we should be able to all get along. And I think that's a very gushy moment, too. And I appreciate you bringing up the positivity.
Let me give one more gushy moment. One more gushy. And by the way, you can, if anybody wants to call up right now and say, you know what, Carm, I completely disagree with everything you said, but you know what, you're entitled to your own opinion. I'll take that call, 312-981-7200, phone number here at WGN. So Andrew Yang's running for president. He's not going to win. He's basically an independent, even though he's running as a Democrat. But so he puts out this thing today that I noticed. Americans are becoming more and more socially isolated, as he writes. The divide between urban and rural America is much wider than it used to be, and it's a larger detriment of one's partisan leanings than almost any other metric. America is sorting itself into distinct groups and losing empathy for fellow Americans. This is exactly what Ellen's talking about. In order to maintain a shared sense of America, we need to end this trend. Our differences and our debates have made us great. But we're currently too able to avoid those discussions by surrounding ourselves with only those who agree with our point of view. The more our bubbles reflect only our views, the easier it is to view other Americans as enemies instead of friends with whom we disagree. I mean, is anything he's not saying here completely spot on? It's imperative that we stop this trend. One way to do so is to ensure that all Americans have an opportunity during their public education to visit areas of America they otherwise wouldn't and engage with fellow citizens they might otherwise not meet. I will initiate the American Exchange Program, through which high school seniors will travel throughout different parts of the country in groups to make friends from different backgrounds and learn about American culture they would otherwise lack exposure to. While spending time in these areas, these students would participate in local social events and volunteer for local organizations, thus feeling a part of these communities. I love it. I love it. I come on, man. You don't know me. I don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
We're not as different as you think we are. The inner city kid, the rural farm kid, whatever. Different color, whatever, different religion. We're not, if you boil it down, 99% of people in this world, they want the same thing, man. They want a roof over their heads. They want food to eat. They mm-hmm. want, you know, comfort of the family. And I think that's a beautiful thing, what he's trying to get done there.
He's hyper-optimistic, and I love what he brings to the table. It's always something new and something positive. It's funny because they're just, so he wants everyone to go on what I guess you can equate to like a Mormon mission. You just go to different parts of the world and just you sit there for and learn about the new culture, and then you jump back in. But it doesn't have to be a Mormon mission. It could just be your own mission
That would be a cool thing to make a part of high school public education mm-hmm. in this country. You are going to go. Where do you live? I live in Chicago. Okay. You're going to be going to Montgomery, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
or El Paso, Texas, mm-hmm. or wherever you want to pick. Billings, Montana. Give me something more rural than Billings.
Cedar City, Utah.
There you go. Cedar City, Utah. Southern Utah University.
Yeah.
And it's going to be part of your curriculum, and you're going to come back, and you're going to write a paper on what you learned.
Wow.
Something along those lines.
That would open up so many eyes.
Or let's use technology. Or you're going to shoot a video on your phone, and it's going to be published on the school website or whatever. And I want it underlined what you got. I want to see who your new friend is, and I want a 3-minute video of the two of you discussing some topic that you right now know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And how you actually learned what it is to detassel corn or whatever, you know, something that shows that you actually got out of your comfort zone and learned something. That'd be great. That'd be great.
I think there'd be a lot less problems in the world if people did that, because you don't. When you send it inside this echo chamber, it doesn't help you at all.
Maybe there would be, and maybe there wouldn't be, but like, it'd be a nice thing.
Yeah,
people are still texting in about moons. I love that
it finally took off.
I love that the moon conversation's taken off. I got something back in the justice world when we get back from this break. But all right, Michael, real fast, what moon name do you have for Saturn's 20 new moons? You got one?
Got one. It's Cheeseball.
The Cheeseball Moon?
Yes.
Do you like cheeseballs, or are you calling me a cheeseball? What's going on here?
No, I like them too, but paying homage to the old canned cheeseballs.
Okay.
Remember, they used to come in a can.
They did. Michael, you having a good night over there? Are you chilling out?
Yes, actually, I'm writing out a shopping list for tomorrow. So yeah, that's how much fun I'm having.
Well, that's that's good organization, Michael. You should be proud of yourself. What's on the list?
Cheeseballs. Number one.
List. Cheese balls. Coca-Cola, Bud Light, cigarettes. Anything else?
No, that's looking good. Pretty healthy there.
Michael, have a wonderful night. You seem like you're on your way. Appreciate you, brother.
Enjoy.
Dude's making a list for shopping.
I like it.
Toilet paper. No. Cheese balls, Cheetos, my man. All right, let's do a quick timeout here. Bruce Miles is coming up after 11:30. I do have a lot of texts about moons, but I want to talk about a young man who was put in a very unfortunate position, but seems like he recovered beautifully. I'll explain that next. 720 WGN.
All right,
I would like to apologize to DeAndre Somerville and the Somerville family from all of us here at WGN. I don't want to take too many liberties, but I'm assuming everyone's on board. You hear the story about DeAndre. DeAndre is a young man, early 20s, and he was selected for jury duty. And he overslept and he missed jury duty. And what did the judge do? Because he didn't explain why he wasn't going to jury duty, he sentenced him to 10 days in jail. 10 days in jail. You missed jury duty. African-American young man. Pretty certain that a suburban white kid perhaps wouldn't have gotten the 10-day in jail treatment here. But that's what happened here. 10 days in jail. Mm-hmm. Now, Somerville, his comments on this. God was showing him the quote, "This is somewhere you never want to go." It was a wild ride, he said, of his time in jail. "I saw some things that I didn't want to see." Apparently one of his bunkmates had a seizure. He saw a man get beat up in a fight. The judge, John Castronakis, hands down the sentence, sends him, and wants to teach him a lesson.
Wow, that's a lesson.
You cannot not show up. This was a duty. We have a trial. You're going to jail, buddy. I'm going to give you some accountability. And you are going to learn from this. So, 21 years old, West Palm Beach, Florida. He found him in contempt of court because he missed a civil trial. Didn't call the court to explain what happened. Now, the judge has now vacated that court finding and rescinded the sentence of probation because he went about his business and went to jail and was apologetic. So here's a young man who's got no record, nothing. He was called in for jury duty.
Wow. I was going to say, what was his record? I thought that he had some kind of relationship with the judge or something.
Zippo nada.
That's a little bit harsh than I'd say.
Somerville was, quote, ecstatic when he read that his sentence had been vacated and his record wiped out. I just felt like, dang, I'm going to have to live with this the rest of my life. So to get that news, I was just really happy. Now, I had something that followed me on my record. 1993, Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Chicago Bulls, Phoenix Suns. I was trying to get into Chicago Stadium in a perhaps illegal manner. Was dealing with scalpers and some other stuff. Got arrested. Missed the game. Jordan scored 55 points. I ended up in jail on the west side. And I got fingerprinted. Now, I didn't have to spend 10 days in jail, but I had to spend 3 hours there with my girlfriend in another cell. And then I had to come out and see her mother. And she was not very happy with me. But when I was trying to work in the securities and exchange world as a bond trader, they checked my background, and that fingerprint came up, man.
Really?
And they're like, and I get called in the office, you didn't tell us about this. I'm like, tell you about what? You were arrested in 1993. I'm like, I was arrested in 1993. What are you talking? I'm like, oh, my God. From the Chicago Bulls game? Are you kidding?
Is that what you said in the meeting?
Yeah.
You're like, no, I got to understand. Jordan was playing.
I'm like, dude, come on. How would I even think that that would be a thing? Mm-hmm. I do remember getting fingerprinted and checked out all over aggressively.
Jeez.
In all the areas.
Chihuahua.
Yeah. But it followed me. So, DeAndre, I'm glad it's not on your record. But this is preposterous.
Truly.
I mean, I get it. I get the judge being mad. We got a trial going on, or you can't be missing jury duty. This is going on, but to send a 21-year-old kid with no record to jail for 10 years? I mean, come on.
Is this something that he's known for, too? Like, the judge is, it's kind of out of order himself, I suppose.
Let me get David in here. 720 WGN. Go ahead, David.
Hey, good evening, folks. Dave from in Lincoln Park here. I just wanted to say if DeAndre had been white, he would have not had to serve one day in jail. The judge probably would have said, okay, this is an African-American, and as usual and as always, African-Americans always get treated unfairly, whether it's by the police or by the justice system.
All right, David, appreciate you. We got a little echo, so I'm going to throw you on hold. Okay, always is a little over the top. It's not always, but yes. Yes, David. It's certainly not balanced. And I'm sure that the judge here, Judge Kasturnakis, might actually say that that is not true, David. He missed jury duty. He overslept. He did not call. And I, Judge Kasturnakis, am doing young DeAndre a favor. There are consequences to your actions. 10 days in jail seems like a big consequence. How about this? How about this? You want to send him to jail? How about one day? Hey, dude, or 6 hours. 10 days? I couldn't believe this story. And then they've got the kid there. He's videoed. He's apparently his grandfather is disabled. He's always helping him out. They're showing videos of him back at home with the disabled grandfather. Come on, people. We got to be better than this.
Have you done jury duty before,
Mark? I've never done jury duty.
Oh, I've done it once, and the likelihood that you even get called into to be a juror is unlikely. So the fact that he got called and was supposed to be in court and the judge gave him 10 days, that's like 0.0001 on the Richter scale that'll ever happen. It's incredible.
What's interesting, though, about this situation is that the kid is actually celebrating it. Quote, since I've been out, I've just gained so much confidence in myself. I found myself, and now it feels like the sky's the limit. So he actually is turning a negative into a positive and learning from the experience, which is kind of amazing, and it seems super harsh, but this kid actually is learning something for it. I quickly learned jury duty is really important, Somerville said. I definitely got the message that it's really important. I'm sure you did after 10 days in jail for missing jury duty. But he's got a positive attitude for it. I'll be rooting for you there, Mr. Somerville. Hopefully you'll continue going forward. News right now. 720 WGN, one of my favorite people who is riding off into semi-retirement. I feel like I have a kindred spirit in some way here with you, Bruce Miles, because right when I was starting in the business was when you were starting covering the Chicago Cubs, which was 1998. So I was making my way, and there was Bruce Miles, and you were doing it for the Daily Herald, which you've done basically your entire career, and now you're segueing into something new. But that was a fun team to start and be around, and you were one of the nice guys, Bruce Miles. You treated me incredibly well as a 22-year-old or whatever I was, 25-year-old. So I wanted to have you on. I wanted to thank you for that at the start.
You know what? I was thinking exactly the same thing this afternoon, that you and I came up kind of together, and we did it the right way. We worked our way up. We paid a lot of dues, and I still remember finally seeing you at the airport, either after a victorious Cubs series maybe on a Sunday or a frustrating one on a Sunday back in those days. So, yeah, a lot of fond memories and a lot of mutual feeling here.
So how are you feeling about this moving on to the next journey? Is it sadness? Are you scared? Is it joy? What would you say?
No, I feel great about it. It was time. I had a lot of people who have retired or semi-retired. They would tell me, you will know when it's time. Your body and your mind and your soul will know when it's time. And this was time, and I'm looking forward to a lot of new adventures. I'm not going to disappear, and I'll be able to write as much or as little as I want for various different platforms over the coming years. So I'm feeling good.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I really appreciate about you, Bruce, is that you enjoyed being at the ballpark. And I'm not saying you're fellow compatriots and friends, Paul Sullivan and Mark Gonzalez and so many over the years, don't. But I will. There are certain people in the business who I will remain nameless that seem to like hate being out and want the game to be over. And I never got that vibe from you. You always seemed to just enjoy what you were doing.
Well, you read that right, Mark. And I learned a long time ago from people in other cities, like Hal McCoy, the Hall of Fame writer of the Cincinnati Reds from the Dayton Daily News. He had a certain joy about coming to the park, and he kept that until he retired. And I try to do the same thing. You know, we're covering sports. We're having fun. And the readers want to be entertained. They want to be informed. So I thought that was almost a sacred charge of mine. And, you know, I learned a long time ago never to complain about back then 3-hour games, but I guess today 4-hour games because people don't want to hear it. And if it's an entertaining game, who cares how long it goes? But now and then they could speed it up a little.
This is true. And yes, you know, somebody who's working a regular job and wants to kill their boss doesn't want to hear the guy who's out of the ballpark watching the Cubs play. They don't want to hear you complaining about what you're doing. That's the last thing they want to hear.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember being on with your old compatriot, Cap, on this very station and him saying, well, your travel is difficult, right? You're not on the charter. You're lugging your own bags. And I said, you know, Cap, I said, when the day comes where I don't want to do this or it becomes too difficult, you won't see me around anymore. So it's, I've enjoyed, you always say every minute of it. There was a few moments maybe where you didn't, but no, I always did. And I always understood that the fan at home didn't want to hear any media complaints, so I never made them.
You wrote a great piece in the Herald saying goodbye and a lot of stuff in there. I loved one of them. When you went to games in spring training, you were walking to the park, and Carlos Zambrano once picked you up along with Gary Gaetti and gave you a ride?
Yeah, here's how that worked. Back in the day, when the Cubs were at Hohokam Park, I lived in a condo complex a few blocks from there, maybe 4 or 5 blocks. And some of the players lived there, too, were very nearby. So when my wife came to town and my kids, I gave them the car and I walked to work. So a couple of times I'm just walking along and I'd see a car pull up next to me, the window rolled down, and whoever it was, Carlos Zambrano or Gary Gaetti, and they'd say, come on, get in. And Gaetti would, and they both were very, very friendly, and Gaetti said to me, I mentioned in the story, that he came back to the Cubs in 99 because there was a lot of camaraderie in that 98 season to which you alluded earlier. Guys would sit around after a game and have a beer and discuss the game and talk baseball. So it was one of those things that kind of humanized things, and you talk so much about the gap between the players and the media being wider and wider these days. We're a lot closer then, and not that they're antagonistic relations now, but I really enjoyed the guys back then because my own generation gap has gotten a little wider.
Yeah, so you think about that too. 98 team in the old clubhouse, much tighter quarters. And Rod Beck, Mark Grace, Jeff Blauser, I want to throw Matt Karchner in the mix as well. These guys would sit around after the game, media in there, they'd be having their beers, they'd be smoking their cigarettes, and you know, we were in there for however long, and then we'd leave, and who knows how long they stayed there and just hung out after the game. You never see that now, Bruce, and they've got much friendlier. You could live in the Cubs clubhouse right now, but you just don't see that, I mean, really ever.
No, you really don't. And I'll throw Glenn Allen Hill into that mix. When he came over after getting traded back to the Cubs, he was in that little bit of a mix there of guys that like to sit around and talk. But you don't. And you know, I think the clubhouse size has something to do with it. There weren't a whole lot of places to go or a lot of places to hide for the players back then. But now in this Taj Mahal that they've got with a circular clubhouse that's 60 feet 6 inches in diameter, and quiet rooms and kitchens and eating rooms and game rooms, there's no reason for the players to be out among the media and to be pestered by us. It's a shame in some ways, but, you know, time moves on, and it's a different mentality these days.
Who do you think, without, you know, doing your tell-all book right now, Bruce, but who do you think, like, the fan base looked at one way and you getting to cover that person saw a completely different side that, you know, was not what the fans thought he was?
Wow, that's a tough one. I come back to today where you look at a guy like John Lester, who is the old-time, you know, the red-you-know-what, the old hard guy type of guy. And he always has the scowl. But, you know, you sit down with John Lester one-on-one, there's a very thoughtful guy. He's got thoughts. He's got thoughts about baseball. He's got thoughts about pitching. He's got thoughts about winning. He's got thoughts about teamwork. So I just think behind that stern veneer and demeanor, there's a guy there that really, really has a lot of thoughts of a modern-day guy. I suppose I'd have to go back and think over the years, but he's the one right now that jumps to mind.
Yeah. I guess who I was leaning on was Mark Grace. Like, I thought that when Grace, the fan base absolutely loved him, and then there was times where Mark would be loving being around the media, and then there were other times where it wasn't quite that way. I don't know if that's unfair, but that's just how that was the guy I was thinking about.
Okay, yeah, with Mark, it was the thing I'll give him credit for is when the Cubs were going bad, and in his days and my days together with the Cubs, there were a lot of times they were going bad, he would always be there to give kind of the state of the state.
That's true.
After a tough loss, he would say, we've got to do this better, we got to do that better. Yeah, there were times when he got tired of being that guy because we always seemed to go to him. Sammy Sosa wasn't really a big talker and wasn't really a big team guy. And there was really nobody else to do that. So Gracie seemed always to be that guy, and now and then it would grate on him.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you think they moved on from Joe Maddon, Bruce Miles?
Boy, oh boy. You know, from a media relations standpoint, and if I were coming back, I'd be pretty sad about that because Joe was really, really good to the media. I think it's like Theo said, they felt it was time. A long time ago, my first manager that I covered was Jim Riggleman, and when he got fired, he said to me, you know what, sometimes they just get tired of you. They get tired of looking at you. They get tired of listening to you, and maybe they tune you out. Now, I don't think the players ever tuned out Maddon because I've been around managers who've, quote-unquote, lost their clubhouse. That never happened. But I think from above, maybe Theo and Jed and the boys thought that things had gotten, I don't know if complacent's the word, or the message wasn't being received the same. Not that there was any antagonism, but maybe players were taking advantage of Joe's good nature. But I think, like Theo said, they felt it was time. I disagree with that, but they don't ask me.
Yeah, another thing from your piece that you wrote in the Daily Herald, and by the way, if you just want to read Bruce's, go to his Facebook page or wherever. But it's a great just kind of recap of your covering the team, Bruce. And you talked about in the World Series 2016, Joe Maddon would allow the beat reporters, yourself, into the manager's office before the game. And so here it is, the biggest games in the history of the club. A lot of nerves, and a lot of managers wouldn't do that, but there was Joe. I'd love to hear some behind the scenes of what that was like.
Yeah, it's kind of an old-fashioned way, like we talked about. Years ago, it was just the beat writers basically covering the team. Now it's, you know, in all legitimate sources, radio, TV, the Cubs' own website. But before games, Joe would have us in. A lot of times he'd have the music on and he'd say, hey, listen to this song. They're getting ready. They're down 3-1, and he's having us listen to a song, you know, on his radio or whatever device it was, the iPod, whatever. But we would just talk. We would talk about strategy. We would talk about how he was feeling. And you know something? I know a lot of people are upset with Joe about how he managed the bullpen and how he managed the team in Game 7, taking Hendricks out and using Chapman. but they don't get there without Joe keeping an even keel. The team was down 3-1. The Indians were poised to win that series, and Joe was the same guy in October and early November that he was in May or June or March or whatever it was, and he told us he was going to be like that. So it was very relaxing, and, you know, we'd share a joke and a laugh, and then we'd be on our way. But, man, there he was just writing out the lineup, maybe listening to some tunes or watching the news on TV. It was really kind of a cool, old-fashioned thing.
Well, that was the year where they, you know, they went to the NLCS the year before, lost to the Mets, beat the Cardinals in the playoffs, which on a team that was not supposed to be in the playoffs, and here they are, you know, 4 games away from the World Series, didn't happen. But then there's all these expectations, and he's talking about don't let the pressure exceed the pleasure and embrace the target. And so many managers have failed in Cubs history in that spot. Jim Fry up 2-0 in 1984. Dusty Baker up 3-1 in 2003. And you can't put it all on the manager. I'm not trying to do that. But to the point that you're making about Madden deserving credit, that team was down 2-1 in the NLCS, 3-1 in the World Series, and they won the damn thing. I mean, that's so anti-Cub, and I sort of think it gets forgotten.
Yeah, and you can even go back to the division series where had they not won in San Francisco in Game 4, they're coming home to face Johnny Cueto. They did not want that. And again, Joe was so exuberant after that game. I remember standing in the clubhouse at the AT&T Park or whatever they call it now, and he was so almost relieved but exuberant, joyful, happy. And then after that, it was the same approach, and I got to believe there's something to it. You know what? I covered the teams in 07 and 08 under Lou Piniella. The team played uptight because I think Lou was uptight. He really wanted to get the Cubs home. He wanted to cement his own legacy. The team played tight in both of those series, and they were bounced out in 3 games by the Diamondbacks in 07 and by the Dodgers in 08, and that was that. And I just think that Joe took the totally opposite approach. The players fed off of that and said, hey, we're just playing a ball game, and they went out, and like you said, they won the damn thing.
Yeah, you know, it's great that you bring up 07 and 08, because the 08 team, that was a 97-win team, it was a 100-year team, and that team was expected to win, and they went into the playoffs and lost 3 straight. And I think that was that the Dodgers series? It was.
Yeah.
And then the grand slam off of Dempster in Game 1, Wrigley Field's a morgue, the series is over, and they played like it the rest of the way. I think every guy made an error in the infield. Madden doesn't get enough credit, Bruce, and I don't agree with everything he did either, but he just doesn't get enough credit. And I personally, maybe it was time, but I don't see how the Cubs are better without Madden. Theo's made a lot of mistakes, right? If I was Tom Ricketts, I'm not firing Theo. I'm betting on him, and I would have bet on Madden the same way.
Well, here's my deal. Everybody in that front office, Theo, Jed, Jason McLeod, got either contract extensions and or a new title like Jason McLeod did. I felt that last year they should have given Madden a 2-year extension to sync up with Theo's contract just to make it fair. I mean, he had as much to do with this as Theo did. And it just seems to me that they'll never use the term, and scapegoating is a strong term, or making him the fall guy is a strong term. But I do think that he deserved better.
Yeah, a couple more minutes here with Bruce Miles. And another thing from that piece that you wrote, Bruce, Kansas City, I worked there for, you know, a couple of years myself, and the Negro League Baseball Hall of Fame is one of the coolest things you can go to. And you got taken around by Buck O'Neill, who's a legend in the game, belongs in the Hall of Fame. How awesome is that?
Oh, that was incredible. Don Baylor, who was big on baseball history and Negro League history, and really a nice man, the late, great Don Baylor, had an outing to the Negro League Museum for the players, and he invited the writers to go. Well, it was myself and Jimmy Greenfield was filling in for the Tribune for whomever, either Teddy Greenstein or Paul Sullivan that year. And Jimmy Greenfield and I went, and Buck O'Neill was there, the guy who was really responsible for a lot of this. And he grabbed me by the elbow, and he said, come on, let's walk and talk. And he pointed to all these statues of guys like Oscar Charleston and Cool Papa Bell and Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson. And it was quite an incredible experience, something that all fans should really get to know about, this almost forgotten about part of baseball history. And these men were not allowed to play in organized baseball, and had they been allowed, you know, a lot of the records might be different and so forth. But it was just a thought by Don Baylor, and then to see this man, Buck O'Neill, who never once evinced any bitterness or hatred about being excluded. And he could have been a manager, too. He took over, I think, an inning when in the early 60s when the Cubs head coach during the College of Coaches got thrown out. I think Buck might have taken over for the rest of the game there. But there was so much that he could have been bitter about and was not, and it was he was just a lovely man.
Bruce, who was, when you look back, who was your favorite guy to cover? Does anyone come to mind?
Yeah, there were several, and I think I put a few of them in the story, dating from my early days. I enjoyed Rod Beck a lot when he got here. Here's this intimidating-looking guy, and he ended up being one of the nicest guys. He said, if I suck, write that I suck, but just don't get personal. And his weight came up, and he goes, well, I never seen anybody go on the DL with pulled fat. So, but over the years, I mean, the wit and wisdom of a guy like Kevin Tappany, guys like Eric Young and Ricky Gutierrez, a double play combination. Ricky got one hit off Kerry Wood in his 20 strikeout game, and I had a chance to talk to Ricky last year about that on the 20th anniversary. So guys like that. Derek Lee, just a total professional. And the guys from today's team, you know, Jason Hayward, Anthony Rizzo. Anthony actually congratulated me on my retirement. Who's going to, what players do that nowadays? You know, Chris Bryant, his dedication to the craft. I mentioned John Lester. But over the years, it was guys like that. Ryan Dempster. And just if you're a beat writer and you get to cover managers like Dusty Baker, Lou Piniella, and Joe Maddon, man, that fills your notebook every day. So a lot more positive than you guys that you'd rather not be around. But those are some of the guys that I'm sure I left about a dozen or so off.
Yeah, and you got to see a World Series, Bruce, and you got to live your dream, really, right? I mean, for however long. And I'm going to miss seeing you out there, Bruce, but I'm really happy for you, and I can't wait to see whatever you're going to do in the, let's call it the semi-retirement. I saw you're already tweeting out that you're getting offers to write something. So perhaps a book? Is that where you're leaning?
Well, that's probably one of the possibilities. I've got another editorial project I'm helping a gentleman on, and, you know, there's various platforms and websites and papers, and who knows, you know, maybe after a while I can do a freelance piece here and there for the Daily Herald, maybe some memories just like we talked about or whatever it might be, but there'll be no shortage of opportunities.
All right, last one. Make a guess. Who will be the next Cubs manager?
Oh, man. At this point, I'll say it'll be David Ross. I don't know if that would be my first or second or third choice or not, but it just seems to be that they're leaning that way. It would seem that Joe Girardi might be a little bit more difficult case. I covered Joe and actually wrote his 2001 post-9/11 speech, another big moment for me. But Joe would be an interesting choice, roots here. But I got to think that they're leaning toward David Ross and maybe that it's his job to lose.
Wow. Okay. To me, it seems like Joe makes the most sense for what they want. At least what they said they want, as far as somebody to come in there who's, you know, going forward and perhaps will bring a little bit more of a stern, whatever you want to call it. But first time managers are having a lot of success, so maybe, and I like David Ross. I just don't know if it's the perfect spot. If it was me to bring him into Chicago, I think he should get his first shot perhaps somewhere else. But if it's here, then he'll be very entertaining, that's for sure. Bruce, thanks so much, man. I appreciate all the time together, and thank you for coming on. It was great to catch up, and looking forward to what's coming next for you.
Well, I ain't disappearing, so I'll see you down the road, Mark.
Okay, Bruce, be well. A shout out here. Thanks again to Bruce Miles jumping on here, 720 WGN. Have you ever heard of Belfour Property Restoration? They're privately owned. They've grown through acquisition of the leading disaster restoration providers in strategic geographic areas, if you can follow all that. Why am I bringing this up? So Sheldon Yellen, he's the CEO of Belfour. It's a billion-dollar disaster relief and property restoration company. Since 1985, long before Yellen was the chief executive, he has written a birthday card to every single employee every year. He handwrites, this is the CEO, sending top down, man. This is how we do things around here. Personal touch. He handwrites 7,400 cards annually. 7,400 cards. That's one for every employee. Now, let's do the math on that for you real quick. There are, by my estimate, 365 days in a year. 7,400 divided by 365 means that he is writing 20.27 birthday cards every single day of the year.
Wow.
20 cards.
That's crazy.
Think about that. Think about the fact that when your mom, dad, boyfriend, sister, girlfriend, cousin just had a birthday and you were at the last second going to get a card or didn't get a card at all.
Mm-hmm.
This dude's got a calendar of everyone's birthday. And he takes the time. Thank you so much for your contribution. Sincerely, what's his name? Love this guy.
You think he's going as far as saying thank you for your contribution? Maybe does he add like a little inside joke or something?
I mean, I don't know.
Or is it just HB?
7,400 cards, handwritten. that's impressive.
When is he finding time to work? He's writing cards all day.
When you're that dedicated in life, Michael Heidemann, you get stuff done. So
I'd like to think he walks around with one of those bowling wrist hands, like, you know, where you need to wear it when you have bad carpal tunnel or something like that.
Maybe. David Yellen, born January 16th, 1958. Old school.
Yeah.
That's how you get it done. The personal touch. I'm not very good at cards. I have a wedding coming up. I'm assuming my fiance is going to write all the thank yous. Except for a couple that I'll take on. But that is impressive. That is motivational. That is just the right way to go about things. Even though even an email would be nice. Hey, happy birthday. I do like the Facebook happy birthdays, though. Like if I was the CEO, even if I wasn't the CEO, just a nice happy birthday. HBD. News right now, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, 12:05. With you till 1 o'clock tonight. We have an Olympic champion coming up at the bottom of the hour. She's in the movie Game Changers. So that will be a fun discussion, along with Elizabeth Alfano, as we discuss, yes, you can have a plant-based diet and be an absolute stud. I think you'll enjoy the conversation, 12:35. But I want to get into this. All right, Chicago Tribune, Dateline, today. Survey says, we need money, team, right? The city's broke. Everybody knows this. How do we go about getting this dough? Should we raise taxes on liquor? Should we raise taxes on cigarettes? Should we raise taxes on ride sharing? Or should we raise property taxes? How do you think we voted? Well, we voted, according to the Tribune, increase alcohol, cigarette, and ride sharing, but do not lift the property taxes. Leave them right where they're at. That's what apparently Chicago residents had to say in an online survey. I'd like to hear what you want to say. 312-981-7200. How should we raise the dough? Like, I do ride share, man. I was in Uber multiple times today. Do I really need to pay more taxes on my Uber? That's not necessarily great. However, I think that's probably a fair thing to do. You're causing more congestion on the streets. We have a wonderful, at least somewhat passable CTA system here. You don't necessarily have to be in an Uber. You could ride the old CTA. Should there be we need money? All right, I get it. A little more taxes on the rideshare. Cigarettes? Costs a lot of money to kill yourself these days. Just the way it is. Keeps going up and up and up and up. And I feel like less and less people are smoking, although the e-cigarette phase is all over the place. So, and then we got the marijuana coming too, so we can put taxes there. What about alcohol? More taxes on alcohol. You're buying your beer. I don't know, 1% on there, another 2%. These are tough times. We got to make tough decisions. People want the property taxes to stay where they're at, which are still exorbitant. But I do think it's interesting. That's right. Tax the drunk. tax the cigarette smoker, and tax the rideshare dude. The rideshare dude, on some level, let's think about the positives of the rideshare person. They're not taking up parking spaces, right? They're providing conversation, especially if you do a pool. Somebody else could be on there. Next thing you know, somebody else having perhaps a better day because all of a sudden they're riding with a cool dude in their Uber. They're sharing a story. Next thing you know, somebody's got a new job or a new friend. I think seems a little bit unfair to the Lyft and Uber riders. Then the property taxes. I think everyone feels like they're paying too much, right? I think it's interesting to me. If you are having quote-unquote fun in your life, you're a cigarette smoker, you're a drinker, we think you should be taxed more. You, sir, you, madam, you want to have that whiskey? Well, if you walk it into Benny's, then you're going to have to pay more. Snap, 72% of respondents indicated an interest in increasing the tax on cigarettes. 85% feel that property taxes should remain the same. 87% said they also feel sales tax should remain the same. The revenues that received the majority increased the tax or fee. Ride sharing, 46%. Alcohol, 46%. And the garage parking tax, 44%. Yep, raise that one. Put it on the people that are parking in garages. Tough times, man.
This is
tough times.
Astonishing.
We're turning on each other, man. That dude, I don't drink a whole lot. Raise the booze.
Mm-hmm.
Raise the parking.
Mm-hmm.
The dude that's coming in from the city, who's driving down, going to work, raise it. Raise it on him.
Jeez. I mean, I understand.
And or her.
Yeah, the old story about raising cigarettes because, you know, it's hurting you. So maybe in a way we're trying to help you at the same time raising taxes to make you get off smoking. I get that. But now with marijuana coming into town, it almost like makes the other argument for these kind of gambling, marijuana, sports betting, those taxes look favorable compared to the garage taxes, the alcohol taxes. It's interesting where the city of Chicago is going, and will this make a difference in 10 years? I'm not quite sure.
That's the other question. All right, we're gonna raise this, we're gonna raise that. Is there gonna be actually any impact on my life that I notice? I don't know. But I did find it interesting that we're ganging up on the boozer. We're ganging up on the cigarette. If you're parking a garage, we don't like that either. 312-981-7200. I live in DuPage and would trade my taxes for Chicago taxes. That's the other thing, too, by the way. Suburban taxes, school. If you want your kid going to public school in the suburbs, chances are you're paying a lot for those houses, which is why some of the values are coming down, which is also why people are departing the state. It's an expensive state to live in. What does that look like down the line? Not good.
No, especially when small towns like McHenry County and DuPage are getting the bulk of these taxes that are getting hit. These are small towns that, you know, you go to the local Walmart and that's your week right there, and you're getting pummeled with these taxes. It's not affecting the city, but these small towns, and before you know it, Illinois is just going to be full back with the farmers again. Cities won't be able to survive. I mean, I've seen so many mini malls and shopping centers, brick and mortar stores break down because of these taxes, and now it's going to be interesting to see what happens in 15 years once Jeff Bezos takes over the world. You never know.
Tough times. 1 in 10 Cook County homeowners have stopped paying their property taxes. 1 in 10. Mm-hmm. It's scary when you consider that we could get to the point where we're underwater and there just isn't dough.
Mm-hmm.
And then where do you turn to? But that's why we got Lori, I suppose. Tough times. And the fact that listen, we're not going to be able to, you wouldn't think that we're going to be able to booze tax our way out of this, or cigarette tax our way out of this, or parking tax our way out of it. It's probably not going to be a decision, right? They're all going to go up, and your dollars are going to go less. Somehow, this is one thing that never really gets talked about. Financial integrity. You can't live your life owing on your credit card, even though so many of us do.
I can't believe people are still doing that. Just pay your credit cards. Listen to Hochberg.
But some people don't have they can't afford it, man. The city can't afford to pay their credit card. Mm-hmm. The state can't afford to pay their credit card. The country can't afford to pay their credit card.
That's a really good point.
It's not responsible. Paul, welcome to WGN. Who do you want to tax, Paul?
Well, you know, the taxation structure, it's unfortunate, because what we've done is let's bring up the pension plans for the state employees.
Sure.
There's 673,000 employees, something like that, that are gaining are using a state pension in one way or the other, and it's costing $173 billion in deficit to do this. There's not enough people paying into the system, so you have an unfunded pension system, and this goes across state lines and even private lines. But even if you look at, the taxation of homeowners or businesses have always paid a higher tax for commercial property because they can monetize the tenants in that property. I don't see – I'm trying to analyze this to say how are we going to balance the budget, because the fact is that you can only get so much out of the consumer because wage inflation has not kept up with the cost of inflation across the board. And so you've got declining wages. You got more people working two jobs to earn a wage that's at what they were to earn one job. And then you've got increased taxes, sales, property, usury taxes, such as license plate fees going up $50 this time around, right? I don't know what's going to happen. And then you've got back office such as data centers and other e-commerce type models, like Bezos' delivery model for things. Younger people are choosing to do more online shopping than terrestrial shopping. Wayfair.com, such things like this.
Terrestrial shopping
I don't know. I mean,
dead.
Terrestrial shopping is really.
I wouldn't.
Have you walked into a big box retailer such as a Marshall Field or any of these
empty
and malls?
Empty,
man. Yep. Empty.
Yep. And
they're also filled with low wage workers that are earning minimum wage to stand at a register.
Yeah, and that job is probably going to go away as we continue to move forward with technology. Paul, you sound like a man in the middle of this. What do you do?
I'm in sales for a technology services company.
Okay.
And then I worked some retail work in a grocery chain in Chicagoland.
Okay.
So I've got some familiarity with both sides of the business. Typically, I'm selling to a middle market company. And middle market companies are really hunkering down to keep their capital in place. They're really not over-investing as this tax plan thought, that they would take physical money and invest it in capital improvements. They're not doing anything of the sort, period.
Why not?
They're not buying any more because they want to stay in a cash position, because they know that when the economy fails, they're going to need a cash position, and that's how it's going to be.
Yep, you are correct, Paul. Appreciate the call, man.
Okay.
Yep,
great talking to you.
Yep, great. Absolutely. 312-981-7200. It's scary, right? I think it's scary. And times change. It's cool. We don't go to Marshall Fields like we did when I was a kid. And when I say dead, it's not dead, but I did walk through Bloomingdale's. Pretty thin. And for manufacturers, I mean, I buy stuff on Amazon all the time. Fiance buys stuff on Amazon all the time. Boxers are coming in. I'm taking them down to the recycling. We live in a big building, so there they go down. You used to go to the store to get that. You don't do that anymore. But that's not so. We need smart people at the end of the day. Smart people who see where it's going. And I think Lori Lightfoot, honestly, is a very intelligent person. And I do have confidence that she'll make some really hard decisions, and she's going to have to, and it won't be popular, and maybe she won't be able to stay in office because of it. But I do think there's an integrity there that I would bet on. Hey, Make Sunday's your official night to tour the city, watch Chicago's best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. We've got an Olympic athlete silver medalist coming up at the bottom of the hour, 720 WGN. I think our caller Paul said Marshall Fields, and I didn't correct him. Hey, man, I'm still worried that or wanting Marshall Fields to be around. Mark Carmen with you, by the way, till 1 o'clock tonight. Nick D warming up in the bullpen. Coming up after 12:30, Dotsie Bausch. She won an Olympic silver medal in cycling. She's also the executive director of Switch for Good. We're going to get you healthy coming up here after 12:30. Elizabeth Alfano, host of the Awesome Vegans podcast on WGN Radio. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm thinking about making the move.
What? Breaking news.
I'm thinking about making the move. Not, I mean, I'm already a reducitarian.
Okay.
A reducitarian. You know what a reducitarian is?
I'm guessing you don't eat as much meat.
I don't eat as much meat as I used to.
As you used to.
As I used to. Which is that is the lamest thing ever. I'm a reducitarian.
So two hamburgers a week or something?
Right. So now I'm down to
single steak.
Like one burger a week. One burger a week.
Pizza's only on Fridays?
Right. Right. There's a new Lou Malnati's, by the way, opening up. They're having it's going to be in the water, in the Wrigley building. Lou Mel's in the Wrigley building.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just a hop, skip, and jump away from here at WGN.
That is correct.
So what would you want to make the switch? Why the switch to veganism? Mark Carmen? This is a weird sentence.
I want more energy, Michael Heideman. I want to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
I want to channel my Peter Pan-ness. I don't know. But the problem is that I just don't cook.
Uh-huh.
Every meal is on the go. And it's hard to eat healthy that way. Harder.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's impossible. But I'm opening myself up to, I think I'll have more energy, I think I'll sleep better, I think my inflammation when I'm playing tennis or whatever will go down.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be the new me, the new Carm. I mean, it's really hard.
Yeah.
I love ice cream. I love cheese.
Oh, you can't eat cheese and ice cream either, can you?
Not if you're going not plant-based vegan action.
I totally forgot.
Now, they supposedly have delicious vegan ice cream. I don't know if anybody's actually can vouch for that.
That's an oxymoron.
I don't believe it either. 312-981-7200.
Well, you're going to get married. You're going to have this new life. You might, you know, have a child down the road. Who knows? You might need those extra years and that extra energy to put, you know, your life on a different track. I'm for it, man. I think you're crazy, but I think you could do it.
I would be very proud of myself. I can't believe how many texts are coming in on the moon. Saturn's got 20 new moons. And they're looking for names. Hi, Mark, Tom, and Vic. Just left work and heard the Saturn Moon segment. My suggestions, To the Gucci, Be Kind, Hush, The Carm, Blue. Bless holiday for you. Thank you, CC. Yeah, people are in on this moon stuff, man. What do I got more here?
Wait a minute, just so that through and two, I'm Mike Heideman. I'm not Tom, but I do love Tom Hush. And I do think that we should name the moon after him, because he's a great moon man.
Hush Moon is a great moon. Let's see here. Forget about the new moons and Saturn. I'm about to tell my wife that I'm all about Sir, some planet that starts with a U. You are funny. That's very funny. Let's see. Wally Moon, Moon Zappa Crappa. How about the Nexstar Moon? I don't know how Nexstar would feel about that, but certainly possible. Blue Moon. If you're just joining the program right now, Saturn. Some amazing astronomers have discovered that Saturn has 20 new moons, and they're looking for names. And I figured that we could, you know, contribute. Because at WGN, we care. I know you guys care. And apparently a lot of you, more of you actually care than I thought was possible. But, so we'll have this, as I'm slightly all over the map here, with Dotsie Bausch coming up, that maybe I could have, like, the vegan Carm moon. The switch for good moon. The moon that just floats out there, that's always something that I look at, that I remember. when I got into my mid-40s and I thought to myself, you know what, it's time. I'm going to try to be better. I'm gonna eat less foods that make me lethargic. I'm not going to fall asleep after lunch. Aren't you like that? Like, when I have lunch, I'm ready for a nap, man.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I don't know if it's the sandwich that I'm eating or...
Mm-hmm. No matter what it is, too.
I don't know if it is no matter what. I think if I made the move to the vegan just a little bit lighter and got some, like, and maybe had, like, a little, like, a lentil soup, maybe I wouldn't be as tired. Maybe I would be bounding into the second half of my day, and then I would be that much more productive, and the radio show would sound just that much better, and I'd have that much more aliveness, and I'd call more people, and there would be a greater connection with me and the family and my friends, mm-hmm. and everything would just turn in the right direction if I just ate more lentils and less meat.
You're equating this all to your diet. Like, the world will start spinning a different direction if Mark Carman starts eating more lentils.
Not the world, just my little...
Your world.
My little world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to dream it big. More avocado.
Yeah.
More lettuce. More kale.
Mm.
More chia seeds.
Blah.
More hemp seeds.
Oh.
More, you know, a banana. I love a good banana. Mm-hmm. Just double down on the banana. Don't want to overdo the potassium, but...
Yeah, you got to keep it under 3 a day, I heard.
Less milkshakes. Less double cheeseburgers with grilled onion and ketchup. Oh, it sounds so good.
Can you eat bread as a vegan? Because this doesn't come from an animal.
I think like maybe an Ezekiel bread.
Okay, so it's some weird bread.
I think you can. I'm not even sure. I think you can have bread.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
I love bread.
I would eat nothing but bread as a vegan, though. I'd become a
but that's the thing, like
vegan.
But see, you eat the, you know, you have bread. You want butter.
Ooh, yeah.
You want cheese.
There's just think about garlic bread with butter. Now I'm getting really hungry.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring up the with Elizabeth Alfano and Dotsie coming up here. Their movie is gonna be on Netflix. The Game Changers, it's going to debut on Netflix, I think, in a couple of weeks. I normally don't spend a lot of time on Netflix, but before we go to news, I just want to give a Mark Harmon recommendation for you. The Spy is an amazing 6-series documentary on Netflix. Amazing.
The Spy, what is that about?
So Sacha Baron Cohen is playing Eli Cohen, who was a spy, real-life story coming to be, who was an Israeli who infiltrated Syria. I'm not going to say anything more about it because I don't want to do any spoilers or whatnot, but it is, first of all, Sacha Baron Cohen is just flat out incredible. Say what you want about him. This guy has traveled the country, put himself in, I don't want to say, danger might be a little bit too much, but he's created just incredible moments of people making an ass of themselves.
He's the best.
He's the best.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's actually being an actor and playing this role, and he does a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Check the news right now. 720 WGN, Mark Carman with you tonight, and pleased to bring in a couple of superstars as we talk about the movie Game Changers, which is making its way to Netflix, which is an awesome place to live your movie dreams these days. Okay, first of all, Elizabeth Alfano is with us, who you know from the Awesome Vegans podcast and a bunch of WGN radio hits. Elizabeth, good evening. Great to have you on again.
Always great to be with you, Mark.
Where are we at with the movie? What's going on?
Okay, so I've been keeping you up to date on this for a couple weeks now. I first started following the movie at Sundance in 2018, and at that point, it was sort of the little engine that could. It was this, you know, film that was taking on plant-based lifestyles and, you know, meat and dairy front and center. It was the little engine that could. Lo and behold, here we are, October 2019. It's going to debut on Netflix, and it's going to rock the house. It's been getting great reviews.
And so the basis of the movie is superstar athletes who became perhaps even better athletes because they recovered quicker by living their life just eating a plant-based diet, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. So it takes you through, you know, it's a documentary, but it's one of those films that has ups and downs and drama and great storylines. It takes you through the main character, the real athlete, James Wilkes, and he gets injured and he starts researching, what's the best way for me to recover? And he realizes, wait a minute, a plant-based diet is really what the gladiators ate. It's what the top athletes have always eaten. Why didn't I know this? And so he goes on this journey to heal himself so that he can get back to martial arts training. And then he researches all these other athletes that are plant-based and breaking records, getting Olympic medals. And it's the story of all these athletes and why they've completely gone plant-based.
Right. And we have one of those athletes on the line right now, Dotsie Bausch. She's a 7-time USA Cycling National Champion. She's a 2-time Pan American Champion. She's an Olympic silver medalist back in London in 2012. And Dotsie, you have a phenomenal, fascinating journey. I guess maybe we could just actually start at the beginning where here you are, you're just trying to figure yourself out at a young age and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Why don't you sort of pick it up there and sort of just detail how you got out of it?
Yeah, well, I was like many young people graduating college. I felt very misaligned with what I had majored in, and was feeling afraid and panicky, and that led into just really self-beratement and self-loathing, and it was a spiral that kind of went out of control that I didn't realize was getting out of control. And to assert some control over my life, I started restricting my food intake, and that led into full-blown anorexia and being hospitalized for it really quite quickly. So as many addictions that people have, whether it be food addiction or sex addiction or alcoholism or drug addiction, many people don't recognize that eating disorders are right within that classification. And it was really just my way of acting out on a lot of the inner pain that I was experiencing from a variety of different reasons, and one of them being just feeling really freaked out by what was taking place in my life at that point in time. So that was a spiral journey that went on for about 5 years, and my eating disorder paired up with its well-known cousin, cocaine addiction, which was, they were feeding each other, and I was just hit in a really, really bad space. That's all there is to it, until I hit kind of a rock bottom space, and which catapulted me into a healing journey that lasted another good 2.5 years. And it was in that healing journey that I found my love for the bicycle. And I was 26 at the time, and I had no intentions whatsoever of doing it at any high level, or racing for the national team, or being professional, or God would have never, I would have never thought in a million years that would have been Olympics in the future there. But my story is really just one of kind of just never stopping. I'm not trying to put the Olympics lightly, but it really was, I didn't have extraordinary talent. I was tested many times, you know, genetically and physically, and I'm kind of mediocre talent in that. But I loved it. I loved the way that it made me feel. I loved the freedom that it brought in my life. And I just fell madly in love with it and just basically never stopped. I just kept, you know, going, and it did land me on the podium, the oldest athlete in history in my discipline at 39 and a half.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you sort of got feedback at the time as you were going through this journey, like, do something to give yourself some level of nourishment that you were perhaps the opposite of what you had been doing before that point?
Well, sure, right. Like, I had just been restricting my food intake for so many years. So as I went through the healing journey and the process, I came out on the other side, and like I said, starting riding my bicycle. And when I was kind of marked by the U.S. national team in 2001 after placing at U.S. nationals in the top five, kind of out of nowhere, to them anyway. And I started working with nutritionists. They wanted to, you know, cycling is a gravity challenge sport, and a lot of gravity challenge sports inherently have athletes that have some issues with their weight. So you know, running or cycling or gymnastics or, you know, sports like that. And so they wanted to, you know, kind of control some of my food intake, weigh some of my food, count calories. And I just was very clear with them that, none of that was going to be a part of my program. I wouldn't be weighing or counting anything that went in my mouth. I really wanted to have complete and open freedom. And so they were supportive and allowed me to really kind of continue the end of my healing at that point.
That's a lot of advocating for yourself right there. I would think that, you know, perhaps you'd be like, you know, I really want to be an athlete. I'll do whatever you want. And you, it's a dangerous slope there. You could have slipped back into something. So congratulations on not doing it. And where'd that confidence come from or determination?
Well, I mean, I think you have to kind of remember, I mean, at this point, I'm almost 30 and I'm 29. And so, you know, as opposed to maybe some people, you know, thinking that the beginning of an Olympic athlete's career is going to start at, you know, 12 or 15 or 16. And you then maybe might have an athlete that is very easily coerced or very easily controlled by coaches and nutritionists. But, you know, I wasn't in that, that kind of that space anymore. I was just shy of turning 30. And I felt very strong and very able in my recovery. And I knew that I didn't want to go back to where I was. And so that I knew that I really had to stick with what I had learned throughout my recovery and what was successful in keeping me well. So, you know, there was a strong passion and reason behind it, but I also just, you know, I probably wasn't as impressionable as you might be as a teenager.
Yeah, fair enough. So then how does the plant-based diet start to come into your life?
Well, it came in a couple of years before Olympic Games. So I grew up in Kentucky, so I grew up on fried chicken and casseroles and macaroni and cheese and brisket and all of it. Never really thought for 2 seconds about how my nutrition affected my performance, which sounds kind of lame and strange, but honestly, really that conversation has only started in the last 10 years, really, whether it be plant-based or not, just even athletes really being acutely aware of what they put in their mouth and how that affects what's going to come out, right? Their output in their sport. And so I hadn't really thought about it at all. And I came in to plant-based eating actually from the ethical angle, but I very quickly started recognizing these performance benefits. And as I'm en route to Olympic Games in 2012, I'm hopefully en route. Of course, I had no idea I was going to make the team at that point. But I am, at this point 37. And so I'm 10 years older than most of my teammates, 20 years older than the teams we ended up standing on the podium with in London. And so, you know, recovery was my race because we all know as we get older, you know, repair happens a little bit slower. So it was just the benefits were, you know, really outweighing any kind of trepidation that I maybe would have had, which I did, about eating an entirely plant-based diet as an athlete. Because we've all been fed the myths. Our whole lives have been indoctrinated with this belief that we need animal foods to be strong and resilient and gain muscle. And that's exactly what the Game Changers does, like Elizabeth was saying. It really just kind of flips the switch and demystifies this whole myth that we've been fed, that we need to be eating animals to be strong and to stand on podiums. So, you know, I was one of those. I had been indoctrinated just the same. And so I didn't really know how it was going to turn out, but it was my secret weapon. I mean, and I started realizing that quite quickly. I mean, within 6 to 8 weeks around that period, you know, of eating plant-based, I was starting to notice little things. I was kind of waking up in the morning and not feeling so kind of inflamed or lethargic or creaky from the training the day before, because as track cyclists, we train 3 times a day. So I was just kind of always felt like crap. Really, you feel horrible all the time as a high-end athlete because it's too much, right? It's not even a healthy level or amount of exercise. It's way, way, way too much. So that was kind of cool. And then I just, you know, kept going down the rabbit hole and other things were happening in my output and my performance, my ability to repair not only at night, but in between workouts so much faster than before. And even in my strength gains, which was, you know, as surprising to me as anyone else, and what I was able to produce in the weight room, I went from being able to lift around 300 pounds times 60 reps times 5 sets on the inverted leg sled to right before Olympic Games, I was up to 585 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Times the 60 reps times 5 sets. It's just, I can't even lift half that now, but it's a lot of freaking weight for a 130-pound woman. So it was extraordinary. Like, I mean, that was on plan.
So
entirely fueled by plants.
Oh, hold on. Like, so what were you eating every day? Just, it's not just the food, but what were you eating?
Well, a typical recovery meal would be, I like to make these big bowls that I call trough bowls because, you know, athletes eat a lot of food in general, and I was probably putting in about 4,000 to 6,000 calories a day, depending on if it was a lighter or harder day. So I would make these big trough bowls that would start with any kind of good, clean grain, like carbohydrates, so quinoa or rice or millet or farro or something like that. And then I would put massage greens on top of that, massage them, A, to take some of the bitterness out, like if you're going to use a kale or something, and B, just because I wanted a lot of the nutrients that came from the kale. So if you massage it in like lemon and olive oil, it'll get smaller. So I wanted a lot of those nutrients. I would do massaged kale, and then I would do hemp seeds and crumbled nuts and avocado and salsa and beans. I mean, lentils are, in my opinion, the world's most perfect food. I ate a ton of different beans, but I love lentils. They have zero insulin spikes, so you just feel really satiated and sustained energy for a long period of time. So cruciferous veggies on top. Sometimes they would even add fruit, you know, like you can add pineapple to that or mango, a little sweetness on the top of it. And then, you know, I would whole make different types of dressings that, so that's an example.
This seems like the time to bring in back Elizabeth into the conversation. Does that sound delicious to you, Elizabeth Alfano? I know you make the most.
Okay, so, yeah, that is my dream meal. Absolutely. So I do a lot of cooking and I do a lot of, you know, online videos and recipes and stuff. That is like my very dream meal. It is so delicious. And just like she's saying, and clearly I'm no athlete, no insulin spikes. That's what I love about that whole meal that you've just said. You know, that meal's going to carry you through, unlike really processed foods or other kind of foods, you know, that you might get this high and then you're going to crash. That meal's going to take you through. But beyond the food, I just wanted to comment. So if people find Dotsie's story inspiring, and I do, and again, I'm not an athlete, but I find it so motivational. It's great to hear her in the film, and also I'll give a plug on the Awesome Vegans podcast, but in the film, you know, Dotsie's talking about how teammates who are a lot younger than her, they're saying like, okay, we can't do another round, we can't do another lap, and Dotsie's like, let's go, I've got it, let's go, I can keep going. And, you know, that story is just replicated again and again with all these other athletes in the movie. The whole movie is so inspiring because every athlete is saying, I don't know if this is going to work, this crazy plant-based diet, but I need an edge somewhere against my competitors. And then they all find that with a plant-based diet, they crush it.
And
we all need that edge. Like every day, every single person is performing. It doesn't have to be on a bicycle or in a weight room or in the pool. You know, I mean, we're all like aging every single day, and all of us want to have a little bit more energy, a little bit more of an edge over whoever we're competing against at work and the office or whatever you're doing. And I'm telling you, this is a ticket.
I
just want to hop onto that. I think that's so true. You look at people and, you know, so many Americans have a diet that is just debilitating for them. Mm-hmm. Not just that they run out of energy by 3 o'clock, let alone 7 o'clock. You know, they're out of energy sort of the middle of the day, but also the amount of people who say to me, like, my bones creak, my knees hurt, my ankles are sore, my legs are swollen. When I was at the Game Changers red carpet and interviewing Chris Paul, he was saying, yeah, I haven't even iced all off season. He said he feels so much better. His recovery is that much faster that he hasn't even been icing when he wasn't, you know, in season. So it's just amazing. I think for the average person, they also get that boost that Dotsie's talking about.
Do I have to go completely cold turkey and get rid of all of it to get the full effect here? Or can I have a cheeseburger once every 3 weeks? What's the okay. Rules here?
Dotsie, you take this one. We get this question all the time. Go ahead. You take it.
Please just focus on progress and not perfection.
Okay.
I don't know why we all have such an inherent like need, right, to just do it exactly this certain way, but you got to do it in your own way, right? And you know, do it enough that you notice the differences, right? So let's not do a cheeseburger like, you know, every day. But I say once every 3 weeks, and you'll start to feel the difference. And after a while, you just won't even be interested in an animal-based cheeseburger. You'll be interested in a Beyond Meat cheeseburger or your own homemade lentil burgers, which I'm sure Elizabeth makes. I make them, so if I make them, she definitely makes them 10 times better. So, yeah.
Well,
I think
super
that's
good
just,
with mushrooms.
Yeah.
With mushrooms. Mm. There we go. I got to tell you, I watched your video or one of your videos, Dotsie, detailing your journey today, and it was super inspirational. And I'm sitting there and I had my smoothie and my whatever else I had, and I'm sitting there in temple tonight, Yom Kippur, the whole thing, and I'm falling asleep. Right. I'm crashing right there, and I'm thinking to myself, see, if you were living the life of Elizabeth Alfano and Dotsie Bausch, this would be happening right now. You'd be more connected to God. Everything would be going better. But that's, you know.
Okay, Mark, so.
Yes. Tell me.
Here's what we have to do. I have to cook for you because I know that you want to go plant-based. I feel it. You've been asking me lots and lots of questions.
So
I'm going to give you some recipes.
Okay. Listen.
Let me do you on like a 7-day starter.
Let's go 7-day starter. I'm in for a 7-day starter.
Okay.
I'd like to. I'm pro making some changes here. I think similar to Dotsie's journey a little bit, not the same exact, but I'm sort of an only do things out of desperation, and I haven't quite hit desperation, so I'm trying to like be more proactive and not do it that way, right? Let's do it now before the diabetes or whatever is going to hit here. Dotsie and I, by the way, I'm not going to say your age, but we're the same age, so you know, okay. let's extend out the old prime here as long as we can, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I also just want to say one thing because I know that it's on the tip of your tongue, and if it's not on your tongue, Mark, it's on all the listeners' tongues.
Yeah.
Do not worry. You are going to get so much protein on a plant-based diet.
I'm not worried
so
about
when
it.
I write you this. Okay, you're not. Okay, because I'm going to write you that 7-day meal plan, and I'm going to write down for you all the protein. So you know where you're getting your protein and how much, and you're just going to feel great all the time.
I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is where do I get this food? How do I make it? The whole thing on the go. I don't cook, Elizabeth. I'm on the go all the time. So how do I strategize that part of it? That's a bigger concern than anything else for me.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. You
hit
that bowl she just made. So super easy. It's basically like taking whatever's left over in the fridge that's not meat or dairy, and putting it in a bowl. So I gotcha. I'll help you, Mark.
All right.
You're going to be fine. You're eating lots of the foods anyway. I mean, people are like, oh, I don't know if I can eat this vegan food. And it's like, well, have you had a banana? You know, had guacamole?
Like, you're eating, like, this food already, right? So, it's super simple, really, because you don't have to cook it to death to kill all the horrible, disgusting bacteria that are living on animals when you put them in the oven or on the fryer, right? So it's really much faster. Like, I can put dinner together every single night in 50 minutes. And before, when I was eating animals, it was, you know, 40 minutes or, you know, it took a lot longer, right, Elizabeth? Don't you think?
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to see how quickly it comes together, Mark. I gotcha.
Okay. All right. I look forward to the future. Hey, great to talk to both of you. The movie, again, is Game Changers. It's debuting on Netflix when? Is there a date?
October 16th, so a week from Tuesday.
A week from Tuesday.
A week from today.
All right. I also want to just tell everybody to watch the movie The Spy on Netflix. It's freaking phenomenal. And then,
really?
And yes, and check out Game Changers, too. Get your life in order. All right. Hey, Dotsie, thank you. Elizabeth, thank you. Great to be with you guys.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
720 WGN. Wrapping it up here. Thank you to Dotsie and Elizabeth Alfano. I'm shocked looking at the text line right now that I'm not getting 10, 15, 20, 1 texts saying that, you know what, I'm going to do that vegan thing too. I'm going plant-based, Carm. I just got inspired by that conversation. Thought the phone lines were going to start blaring. People wanting to give up the meat. Not happening. Come on, man. Trying to go next level here on the night side. 2 minutes to go in the period with Nick DiGiulio coming on up here. I did get a little movement in the studio, though. I see a Michael Heideman. I see him swirling it around in the head, thinking about it.
Absolutely.
Adam Phillips, engineer.
Is he going vegan?
not the prime candidate, right? But he was talking. He's like, you know, people are trying the Whopper at the. You had it too.
Yes, I did. With Ken Smith, he brought it in.
Everyone's saying that it's got too much mayo and it's not good for you and don't eat it.
It's all mayo.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
Yeah. Well, if I'm going to make a health move, I'm not going to use Burger King as the...
You don't say.
That's probably not the way to do it. But thanks to Dotsie. Thanks to Elizabeth Alfano. Thank you to Bruce Miles, retiring from the Daily Herald, but still writing after all these years, jumping on, talked to Little Cubs baseball and different cast of characters that went through there in his 20-plus years covering the team. Always good to talk to Bruce. Hadn't spoken to him on the radio in a long time. So enjoyed having him on tonight. A little bit of conversation as well on the college admission scandal tonight. Michael Heidemann, thank you so much for producing. I am back at some point. I know I'm back here next Tuesday night in this same slot, so look forward to that. And, Nick D coming up here. And a reminder to all our Jewish listeners out there, have a very safe and easy fast, is how they put it. And don't do radio or work on Yom Kippur, unless you really love your job and just want to be there and couldn't say no.